Fire Sign Theatre presents The Tale of the Giant Rat of Sumatra.
Tell me the whole bizarre story.
Well, yes, I suppose I can tell you, but the public must never know.
Oh, I'll just write that down. It was long before I met you, Doctor.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You went to the Met.
You were in Afghanistan.
I was wearing Stanley's Afghan.
I was playing the Outer Islands with a small theatrical company. We were holed up in a rat-infestuned pension in Goonrot.
Really? Oh, rat-infested tension in Goonrot.
You see, Claxon, if they don't chew, their teeth grow through their brains.
How very incisive.
It was a close and muggy day. There had been 3 muggings in the lobby since dawn. I wisely kept to my room, but there came a sudden beating at my door.
Oh, what? Oh, well, I'll get it.
No, it's part of the story. I rose unsteadily to my feet, took careful aim with my trembling Wembley, and as the door swung open...
Good morning, Mrs. Moriarty.
I fired point blank.
Mrs. Moriarty, my dear lady, let me help you.
Aw, can't we just see it, feel it? The knocking at the door as it opens, and then the gunshot. It's the tale of the giant rat of Sumatra, presented by the Fire Sign Theater, with 4 fellows who began producing comic radio broadcasts in Los Angeles. We're told by Jacob Smith in his study, Spoken Word. Though clearly a product of the 1960s, Fire Sign's output had less in common with the comedy records of that decade than with an earlier generation of radio drama. David Osman said that he had laughed at Mike Nichols and Elaine May LPs, but was less influenced by that duo than by the golden age radio couple Fibber McGee and Molly. Indeed, the group's name is a reference both to aspects of the counterculture, all the members were astrological fire signs, and to old-time radio, the Fireside Chat. Phil Proctor stated that Firesign wanted to produce records as if radio had continued into the modern era with the full force of energy it had during its so-called golden age. We'll find there's something of that vision in the work of Gabe Hagvak, who loves and respects the early radio plays, but also has a strong desire to do justice to what's been written since, in fact, written to this very day. He has found sympathetic players at Hamilton Gibson Productions in Wellsboro, and they are about to launch the 4th annual Tune In to Radio HG Festival. For the first time online, they'll present 4 days filled with radio theater, Thursday, August 6th through Sunday, August 9th. David Osman of Firesign mentioned Fibber McGee and Molly. Both Fibber McGee and Molly and David Osman and Firesign will be represented during the week. We had a chance to speak by phone with Gabe Hagvak, founder and producer of the festival, about his own roots in radio and what's ahead this week online.
I guess the real answer is that I grew up in a radio family. We're the kind of family that had a radio, a little AM radio in our kitchen. So that was what was on when you got up in the morning to have your breakfast. You know, I know my parents wanted it on to hear the traffic reports, but it just stayed on. Really, television was something you did at nighttime. And because Dad was in charge, it was news until 8 o'clock. So when I got old enough, I had a radio in my room. And we were a WORAM radio family. If you recall or know WOR, they had some great shows like Rambling with Gambling and E.G. Marshall's Mystery Theater that they played weeknights at 7.05 p.m. So I kind of found that show, that Mystery Theater was a radio drama program. Contemporary radio dramas, you know, with a mystery or thriller or horror kind of slant to the stories. So I'd be listening to the radio while doing my homework, and I discovered this thing. And I was like, I like this very much. And I was kind of dimly aware that before there were televisions, people gathered around a big radio in their living room. You know, my mother told me about that. But this is the first time I actually heard a story told completely through sound, and I was pretty hooked. So my love of radio drama comes from, you know, my youth, as I've got, you know, interested in it, started reading about it. I have 1 year for a birthday present. My parents gave me a little tape recorder, the most primitive possible thing. But my friend Ralph and I would make up radio plays and record them to cassette and then play them back. And, you know, at that time, there wasn't really much radio drama on American radio, but slowly it started to make a reappearance. And, of course, nowadays, there are many, many podcasts that are actually audio dramas that people can listen to. So this art form, this dramatic form of storytelling using only sound, is really making a comeback these days.
So you're in place in Wellsboro, and you decide, wow, we could. In other words, how did you get from WOR to Wellsboro?
So the first time I saw a stage radio show was actually in Greenwich Village in a mystery bookstore. There was a small troupe that was performing in their back room. And you'd go in, and they had a little radio station set up, and the actors would come up, read from the script, and someone would perform sound effects. And I said, I love this idea. So I started doing it as well. And I created a little company called Broadcast Free Radio, and we appeared in a few comedy clubs. Flash forward to moving to here to Wellsboro, I became involved with Hamilton Gibson Productions. And, you know, at this point, it was possible to get the rights to perform staged radio plays, well, work that were written specifically for this style of presentation. And we did It's a Wonderful Life, did a few other things. So one year, we were just sort of brainstorming about what our next season was going to be, and we were talking about doing staged radio plays. And we were, you know, do this, should we do that, should we do more than one thing? And all of a sudden, we kind of had a light bulb moment. And we said, what if we presented over the course of 5 days, what would be on the radio if you turned on the radio, this fictitious radio station that did nothing but radio plays? And so that was the first Tune Into Radio HG radio play festival. Each night was a completely different slate of shows. And the audience would come in, and the on-air light would go on. The announcer would say, okay, coming up, we're going to listen to Sam Spade, followed by, you know, whatever came next. And each night was a completely different set of shows. Well, that was very popular for a number of reasons. People really enjoyed seeing all these different kinds of radio presentations, but also gave us an opportunity to allow more of our community to participate as actors. There are plenty of folks who are kind of interested in acting, but were really afraid of trying to memorize, you know, an entire play. So when they knew they could hold a script in their hand, oh, all these different people wanted to try it. So we got a lot of interest in our community to perform this way. And we also were able to allow people who wanted an opportunity to direct, sort of the first opportunity to work on a project that was smaller and didn't involve, you know, overseeing lighting and a set and costumes and all those things. Just focus on the actors and what sounds we hear. And that would be a great way for people to sort of build their skills as directors. So, you know, as you notice, it's been 4 years. It's kind of become a thing people expect and look forward to. But when the COVID shutdown began, we were all very uncertain as to what was going to happen. So I met with my fellow directors, and we decided, you know, we could do this as a live stream only, just like listening to the radio. And that way, whether or not the theater is opened by August, we can still know that we're going to have this festival. So that's how the live stream idea came about.
How have people been rehearsing and so forth, preparing for the play safely?
Yeah, well, you know, we had to come up, first of all, with our safety protocols, and the HG board had to approve them. So I told other directors, everybody's going to have a small cast, 4 or 5 actors only, and we'll rehearse in this space that we have in groups of basically 5 people, socially distanced. You come in wearing a mask. When you sit down, you can take your mask off to read and put it back on again. And as soon as that cast leaves, we disinfect the music stands, we disinfect all the surfaces, and then we let the next group in. So we had to schedule things very carefully, and the directors did have to keep their cast sizes as small as possible. But that way we were able to, in a reasonable way, keep the space clean and disinfected and allow people to come and go for their rehearsals. Performances are being held the same way. We're basically staggered them. So a cast will arrive, you know, at our theater, which is currently designed to look like a radio station. They'll go to their microphones, stand there. The director and the sound effects people are also distanced. Everybody's at least 6 to 8 feet from each other. And then we turn on the lights and start the performance. So in this manner, we never have more than 10 people in the room at a time, which meets the guidelines for people meeting inside. We don't have an audience coming in, so we don't have to worry about distancing the audience. And everybody is separated, wearing masks, except, of course, when they're active.
We'll want to learn what it is you've selected, but we had notices in advance that you all were doing auditions, you were doing workshops on sound effects, you were really preparing the ground for this.
Yeah. Back before the COVID, what we envisioned was a summer full of activities that pointed to the skills needed to perform, you know, on the radio. So we did a workshop on voice acting. We did a workshop on creating and performing sound effects. And what we thought was is that we could maybe reach beyond the Hamilton Gibson community to people from the outside who go, oh, that's an interesting idea. Let me see what that is. So we held these workshops. We ended up holding them on Zoom. And again, just to sort of show, here's how we do this and give people a chance to try certain things out. And then we invited them to come to auditions or invited them to be part of the team performing the sound effects.
And so that's like the old days sound effects where you have a box of sand and shoes walking in the sand.
Yes. You probably know this, but that's usually referred to as BBC style, which apparently they often still do this, where the sound effects are performed live along with the voice actors. It's a lot of fun to watch, so that's obviously what we do. Occasionally, there'll be a sound effect that we can't replicate in person, like usually the starting of a car or a car crash, and so we'll bring in a pre-recorded sound effect to play in that place. But the bulk of it is done live and in front of the audience. We've got people who come each year just to do radio plays. They never come to audition for our stage plays, but they love voice acting, and they love sitting there at the table with shoes on their hands, you know, making footsteps and opening and closing doors. We really got sort of created this group of people who are excited about this kind of performance.
Tell us, Gabe, because you're directing and you've done this, you've had a troupe yourself. What makes voice acting special? It's not the same.
Right, it's not the same, because you cannot use the visual aspects of communication to put across your character. You know, you can use many of the techniques that stage and film actors use in terms of finding your character and figure out who they are and how they're going to interact with the script. But now you've got to figure out, how do I communicate this character that I'm creating to the audience if they can't see me? And so you have to think about what the person sounds like and learn techniques to sort of control your voice to create, you know, sometimes you want to talk with a deeper voice because you're, you know, that's the kind of person you are. Or maybe you're really a nervous kind of person and you're going to be talking up towards your nose. You know, these are kind of simple things that people can learn how to do and not have to be an impressionist to be able to do it. But then also just sort of learning how to convey emotion just with your voice. And so the same choices that any other actor would make in terms of, what am I feeling? What is my character experiencing as this is happening? You've got to bring that into your voice so people can hear it. So sometimes that means exaggerating a little bit to make sure that a mental picture is forming in your audience's mind as they listen to you. That's where the directing comes in. You know, we listen to people perform, and then we start making suggestions for things that they could tweak or push a little bit further to make sure that the picture is coming across that we want. We talk about this a lot. What picture are we creating? We bring in the sound effects people, it gets really exciting too, because you have to think through things like, you know, here's a sequence of events that are going to happen. We could just do them. And what the audience will hear is a lot of noise. And they'll say something happened, but I don't know what. But if you sort of think about it as a sequence, you know, hey, what's over there? Footstep, footstep, footstep. I think I hear a voice. Click, click, rattle of a doorknob. Doorknob opens. Big loud crash. Footsteps running away. Okay, I can follow that. Somebody went up to a door, listened, opened it up. Something bad happened on the side of the door and they ran away. You know, so if you can sequence things the right way, you build the picture of the action in the audience's mind.
Now, tell us what's on offer then. What will we get to experience?
Oh boy, there's a lot of stuff. We have about 12 to 14 scripts that are being prepared for presentation. We have one night that's dedicated completely to old-time radio. That's going to have an episode of Fibber McGee and Molly, Easy Aces, Sam Spade, Gunsmoke, and The Whistler, Stranger in the House. So these are all episodes from radio programs from the early 40s that we'll be performing. Then for contemporary work, this is another aspect of the radio festival I didn't tell you about. We had encouraged local writers to create scripts for our festival. And this year we're going to be presenting four things that were written locally. One is The Telephone Game with Nancy St. Stacy. Nancy St. Stacy is a celebrity reporter who investigates the paranormal. We're going to have Community Pet Corner, which is a series of updates on pets looking for homes, including a parrot who is a key witness in a mob case before court. and we have the Children's Soap Opera Network, which features segments from soap operas for little children. And we have, Dad Detective, which is a story of a retired detective trying to settle into suburban home life and not succeeding at all. A lot of fun stuff comes out of it. We also we have Sesame Mucho, which is a skit by the Fire Sign Theater that David Austin gave us rights to perform. We have two plays by a playwright named Eric Coble, a contemporary playwright. He writes stage plays, but for fun, he writes radio plays, and he offered to us the right to stream them for free as well. So we're doing two of his scripts. One is called The Pepperonis, which is about a mobster who has a secret life as a pizzeria owner. And yes, it is completely a spoof of The Sopranos. And the other play by him we're doing is called A Brief History of 20th Century Theater. And it is a series of hand soap commercials as if written by all the famous 20th century playwrights, David Mamet, Eugene O'Neill, Tennessee Williams, et cetera, et cetera.
We'll be roaring.
It's been very exciting over at the theater as we've been technical rehearsing and dress rehearsing our performances. I think everybody involved is, first of all, very excited to get out of the house in a way that's safe but still fun, and we're all enjoying the material. So we're all getting very excited. We're starting to kick into overdrive our promotion of the event so that the community can know about it, and hopefully people are getting excited about attending these.
Now tell us, what are the logistics? How do we get to witness what you've been up to?
Well, I want as many as possible, and the fact that we're online means that maybe some people from outside our area will get to enjoy what we're doing. It is a live stream only event, and it's an important distinction. It's not like Netflix, where you can go and watch these shows whenever you feel like it. You've got to tune in at performance time. And what you do is you go online, and I'll give the web address in just a moment, but you go online to our online ticket sales box office, that's BookTix, and you find the show, you click on the show you want to buy a ticket for, and when you purchase the ticket, you'll get an email asking you to redeem your pass. And that's basically to confirm that the email address is connected to this ticket purchase. And then once you've done that, you will get your e-ticket. It's just an email, and it'll have a link in it. So when it's time for the show, you click on the link, and it will open up the live stream screen on the BookTix platform. And then when we begin the show, you'll see it on your computer or your smart TV or wherever you want to enjoy the stream from.
People do things like that all the time, so that's an easy thing.
People are more used to this idea than they were, 4 months ago. So hopefully folks will be able to navigate it without too much difficulty. It's just a two-step process. And again, I think the important thing is to understand that if you buy a ticket for Thursday at 7:30, you need to log in on Thursday at 7:30. You won't be able to stream on demand. And the other thing is, please don't come to the theater. Please don't. We can't let you in. That's not how this works.
Now, a couple of questions. You're going to do the Fibber McGee and Sam Spade and those things. The thing is, you're doing them straight. You're not making fun of them. You're not doing them, you're not camping them up or anything.
No. We're trying to present them the way they were written. I mean, a lot of the things we're doing are comedies. So, what we do is we do them. So we play the Fibber McGee and Molly is a hilarious comedy, and we'll play it that way. But we're not making fun of these shows. We're respecting the material as best we can. Occasionally you'll run into an anachronism that, I'm not sure anyone's going to understand that joke anymore, and so we might alter it. But no, we're not. These aren't meant to be parodies.
And the other thing is, you're doing some mysteries, and you're doing some comedies and send-up things and so forth. But ultimately, what makes a good radio theater project, a script? What's a good one?
Well, I would say that the key ingredient for audio drama is the intimacy. You're inside your audience's head. Sometimes they refer to the eyes as the bully of the senses, and what you see becomes locked into what you're imagining is happening. What I like about audio drama is that the play is created between the audience and the performers. We're creating all these sounds, but the audience is imagining in their mind what is happening. And so in this way, we sort of create it together. And that creates an intimacy that really, if you're not going to be in the same room together, that's probably the most intimacy that we can create. In terms of what makes a good story to tell in this way, I think what tends to work best are the things that really play up the imagination, which is why I think a lot of audio drama tends towards the fantastic or things that would be hard to get in front of a camera to see. Like 2 years ago, we did an adaptation of The Lost World, which has dinosaurs and cavemen and all these kind of wild things in it, as heard through the experience of these four explorers who get trapped there. So I think it's that combination of the intimacy with the characters who provide the point of view that you're hearing from and the engagement of the imagination in creating the story that you're telling.
Gabe Hochvaag, founder and producer of the Tune In to Radio HG Festival, speaking about the fourth annual celebration, August 6th through the 9th, this Thursday through Sunday, and it's online this year, as you can understand, because of the pandemic. We had a chance to hear that there will be the classic radio scripts like Fibber McGee and Molly, Sam Spade, and Gunsmoke, but also up-to-the-moment scripts composed by those in the area. So it's a wonderful array, and the evenings get underway online at 7:30, starting Thursday evening, 7:30 Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and then Sunday afternoon at 2:30. They suggest families with younger children are encouraged to watch the Sunday performance. It's rated G. Parental guidance is suggested for children who watch the shows presented on the 6th, 7th, and 8th. There's some mild language in some of the scripts. The Tune In to Radio HG Radio Festival is an online live stream event only, as we heard. And for more information, hamiltongibson.org. HamiltonGibson.org, and you can go to booktix.com and you'll have everything you need. The link is only scheduled at the time of each performance, as Gabe wanted us to understand. Also, Gabe made a special point of thanking the sponsors for this year's festival. And as we know, especially in pandemic times, artistic organizations need support from their community, people who will attend events, but also from sponsors. So a special shout out to the sponsors for the fourth annual Tune In to Radio HG Festival. It's August 6th through the 9th, and for all the details online, hamiltongibson.org. It's Hamilton Gibson Productions in Wellsboro presenting an online radio theater festival. For more information, hamiltongibson.org.